On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. So a New York Times national politics reporter last week described Wisconsin as one of the swingiest of swing states, and every court decision that changes who gets to vote carries outsized weight. So we're breaking down recent decisions by a federal appeals court on multiple voting laws and regulations. Did you hear about the appeals court ruling last week? What questions do you have about how it impacts state elections? And then the state Supreme Court came down with a decision to hear oral arguments in late September on an effort to purge voter rolls. Have you been following the voter roll case? What questions do you have about how the state purges voters with out-of-state registration? We're at 800-642-1234. Laura White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laura, welcome back.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the Supreme Court ruling last week on voter rolls. What happened there?
So what happened last week was kind of interesting. It's a part of the process that normally doesn't get a lot of attention in court cases. It's part of kind of the scheduling and logistics leading up to the arguments in a case. So what happened was the court issued an order in response to a petition from the plaintiffs in the case, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, asking to expedite the arguments or to actually bypass oral arguments entirely and just rule on the case based on briefings. And the court came back and said, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to move forward with a regular briefing schedule, regular oral arguments. And this is a really big deal because everyone's watching this voter purge case really closely in the lead up to November and kind of trying to figure out when the court might rule and if it'll affect, you know, who's on the voter rolls in November for a really big presidential election.
So the justices rule in a 5-2 decision. Justice Rebecca Bradley dissents. What did she share about her reasons?
So she had a very, very fiery dissent. She basically said that in her view, the court is not doing its duty to the people of Wisconsin. She said that she kind of touched on that phrase that, you know, even people outside of the courts hear, justice delayed is justice denied. She said because the election is coming up, the court not moving quickly to make a decision that is relevant to the integrity of the election, in her view, you know, who's on the voter rolls, she said is kind of an abdication of the court's duty, that it has a duty to move quickly on this and it has chosen not to.
Well, so this case stems from way back in October 2019 to how 230 voters from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, you know, indicating that they believed they had moved from their current address. How did we get to 129,000 voters?
So this number, it was 232,000, as you mentioned early on, and has dwindled to about 130 at the last check. And that's because we're working with a list of people that is still interacting with the state and still responding to this official mailing from the state. So it's kind of like if you're waiting for somebody to reach out, make a phone call, take an action, they'll be removed from the list, I think is a easy way to describe it. And people are continuing as this case moves forward to kind of interact with the state and do the things that they need to do to get off the list. So as time goes by, this list has gotten smaller and will likely continue to get smaller. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons, too, that people are watching so closely the timeline for this case and when exactly arguments happen and when a ruling might happen.
We're talking with Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She's breaking down the recent state Supreme Court order. Have you been following the voter roll case? What questions do you have about how the state maintains its voter rolls? Have you encountered confusion at the polls about your ID or registration? What happened? Join in at 800-642-1234. Laurel, explain why the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty brought this case in the first place.
So this is kind of a complicated process to explain, and how this list is created and how people get on and off of it. So I'll start from the beginning and take a deep breath.
Will do.
Basically, what happens here is the state subscribes to this nationwide service called the Electronic Registration Information Center. And what they do for states in helping them maintain their voter rolls is basically look out for when people register at a different address than the one they've voted at on through any sort of government channel. So whether they submit a change of address form at the post office, they register a new vehicle at a different address. ERIC flags them, the organization.
That's the acronym.
Information Center. Uh-huh. Yep, ERIC flags them for the state and says, hey, we think that this person may have moved. So the state sends a postcard to that person at the registration, their voter registration address, the place where they've, you know, voted last, and says, we have reason to believe that you may have moved. Do you still live here? And this is the part that gets kind of tricky. According to the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which filed this lawsuit, the person that gets the postcard under state law has to respond within 30 days by contacting the state and saying, I still live here, in order to stay on the voter rolls at that address. Under current Wisconsin Elections Commission policy, which was voted on by members of the commission, there are six members, they're political appointees, they have decided that their policy is to let people stay on the voter rolls for up to 2 years if they don't respond to that mailing. And that's because of some experiences that they've had in the past where people have been erroneously removed, had to be put back on. There had to be supplemental lists of people at the polling place because of confusion about this. So they set that time frame to kind of smooth out the process a little bit. But Will says, you can't do that. That's violating state law.
And so you see a very wide difference between 30 days and a couple years.
Absolutely. And that's where the sticking point is in the lawsuit.
Is ERIC still a system that is widely used?
Yeah. You know, a large number of states do this. And we've had, of course, a lot of conversations in recent years about the integrity of voter rolls and how states maintain them and how states make sure that people aren't erroneously voting in a particular area. You know, voter fraud, basically the voter fraud conversation. And ERIC is considered to be one of the tools to mitigate that.
How will the makeup of the state Supreme Court change by the time these oral arguments are heard in this case after the 29th of September?
This is another really fascinating element of this Supreme Court order from last week. So not only are we getting a little hint into, you know, when they're going to rule and that kind of being closer to election day than some people might have thought, the makeup of the court is going to change. Conservative Justice Daniel Kelly ends his term on the court on August 1st, and he's going to be replaced by liberal justice-elect Jill Karofsky. So the partisan balance of the court, which is currently 5-2 in favor of conservatives, is going to shift to 4-3, which, you know, obviously there's still a conservative majority there, but it's narrowed. And it's not completely out of the question that we see bipartisan decisions and justices sometimes shifting. And so anytime that narrows, it increases the likelihood that we could have a decision with the liberal side of the court.
WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide to recent court decisions involving election laws and regulations in our state. What questions do you have about the Federal Appeals Court decision last week on Wisconsin election laws? What's your take on restricting early voting to 2 weeks? Do you vote early? Share your experience, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with more State Cap with Laurel White here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're digging into recent court rulings that affect elections in Wisconsin. Last week, a three-judge federal appeals court upheld voting restrictions that had been pending for years. Wisconsin's photo ID law not in question. What questions do you have about the appeals court ruling, especially around early voting? Have you followed this litigation? How do you feel about it? We're at 800-642-1234, and WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide. So, Laurel, the federal Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on a matter regarding Wisconsin elections last week. Can you bring us up to speed on the history of this case? Who brought it?
So this case was brought by One Wisconsin Institute, which is a liberal advocacy organization, and they were essentially challenging a broad swath of election-related laws that had been passed under Republican control in the state capitol. So Republican-backed changes to elections essentially since 2011. And those include, you know, the voter ID law, some restrictions on early voting. Those are kind of the big two, and some smaller technical changes that in One Wisconsin Institute's argument made it disproportionately difficult for minority communities, young people, and the elderly to vote in Wisconsin.
All right. So what did the ruling say about early voting in Wisconsin?
So the ruling actually reversed what the federal district court decided in 2016, and Wisconsin's limits on early voting are going to go back into place. What Republicans had done in Wisconsin was kind of specified the window of time that people could go and cast in-person absentee ballots. So go to their clerk's office and vote in person before Election Day. That period of time had been narrowed to 13 days before Election Day. So the 2 weeks leading up to it, excluding the Monday before Election Day. And the reason that they wanted to do this was they said it was a really too broad of a difference between cities like Madison and Milwaukee and how much early voting they were offering and rural communities in Wisconsin. So Milwaukee and Madison had been offering in some cases several weeks of this option to go and cast a ballot in person early, whereas some communities in Wisconsin only had a couple days. And they said, that's not really fair. We feel like it needs to be uniform across the state. The pushback to that in the more urban communities was, well, we have more people, we have more demand, we need this to be spread out, we want to offer more. So that was kind of the back and forth about early voting. And what's going to happen is we're going to go back to that 13-day window.
So at the 13-day window, so that is one piece of this appeals court ruling. How did the ruling come down on Wisconsin's voter ID law?
So the big change here has to do with student voters. Part of the decision that was actually upheld from the lower court, so this was a part of the decision that was in favor of the liberal groups, which for the most part, the decision was not, is that students in Wisconsin are going to be able to use expired student IDs as identification at the polls. The argument was that, you know, not allowing them to do that was discriminatory and made it too difficult for them to provide the appropriate ID at the polling place. And interestingly, the decision also related to students doesn't require the use of these dorm lists. People who have been following this case since 2016 or read things about it may have heard the phrase dorm lists. And basically what those are, it was a requirement to have residency and citizenship status on a dorm, if you lived in a dorm, provided to the state to prove that, you know, prove your residency basically and make sure that people weren't voting when they shouldn't be. And that process won't need to be used either under the court's ruling.
We're talking with WPR politics reporter Laurel White. She's breaking down the federal court ruling on Wisconsin election laws. What do you want to know about how this ruling affects state elections? What's your take on restricting early voting to 2 weeks? Do you vote early? Share your experience, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Karen is with us from Madison. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Every single one of these things that you're talking about are all to keep people from voting, number one, to make it more difficult to vote. That's not a representation of our representative government. But my point is that the thing I wanted to say is that the whole thing about this was to because of voter fraud. And my understanding is that there were like 7 people who erroneously voted, and most of those people were felons, and they didn't know that they couldn't vote. And so we have this whole big thing to suppress votes, really, let's call it that. And so could you comment on the voter fraud? And it's very upsetting as a citizen. Thank you.
Karen, thank you for the call. Laurel, you know, Karen's seeing this as a suppression of votes, these moves in these lawsuits, and not exactly countering a problem of voter fraud.
And that was a huge part. I covered the arguments in this case back in 2016, and that was a huge part of their case, was that voter fraud is not rampant in Wisconsin. There aren't a large number of cases. For folks that are interested in kind of the different kinds of voter fraud and what has been identified by the state, that's something that the Wisconsin Elections Commission releases information on. And I'm trying to think, I wish I could come up with a number off the top of my head the last time they put out a press release about voter fraud in Wisconsin and how many people were found to have committed voter fraud. It wasn't a huge number. So I think that that is definitely part of the conversation, that people say, you know, we don't have, thousands and thousands of people committing voter fraud in Wisconsin. These laws, these restrictions are overreactions on the part of the Republican-controlled legislature. And Republicans push back and say, well, you know, we need to do everything we can to ensure that people have faith in our elections. The system isn't working if people don't believe in it. And, the structure that we've put in place allows people to know that their vote is safe.
Let's bring in another call now. Carolyn is with us from Madison. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Just thinking about people having to wear face masks and voter ID cards. And it just doesn't go together for me. I mean, voter ID always seemed rather absurd to me, but this is extra absurd that it's still... Well, I don't know what to do about it. So,
Carolyn, so you're saying that showing your voter ID and wearing face masks, you'll have to pull down your face masks in order to see that.
I don't know what they're going to ask. How we shouldn't be required to have voter ID in the first place. So,
all right, Carolyn, thank you for the call. Laurel, where does voter ID stand in Wisconsin?
Voter ID has had a number of legal challenges against it, and it has survived all of those. So voter ID is seemingly here to stay in Wisconsin. I think to her point, you know, we know that clerks for the April election talked about how voter ID would work and how people could, you know, identify themselves with masks and things and make sure that everything was on the up and up. And I think that's something that the conversation will continue about in November in terms of distancing and all of these new kind of realities that we live in and have to work within when we do things like an in-person election.
Let's bring in Donna now in Adams. Hi, Donna.
Hi. My question is, Eric, the service that monitors who might be a duplicate voter or may have not be a legal voter at a certain address, who funds that? Who operates that? How many states subscribe to that? And who monitors that?
Donna, thank you.
Is it a private business?
We're short on time here. Laurel, what about Eric?
So Eric is, and you can look this up online. They have a lot of information about kind of their structure and who the current members are. I don't know off the top of my head how many states. I know it's a fairly sizable number of states that participate in Eric and pay fees to be part. So the state pays to be a member of Eric. It's kind of like a subscription service. I don't know, again, exactly those numbers off the top of my head. So that would be something that I think the Eric website would be able to tell you.
Donna, thank you. Laurel, in the last few moments here, how did the federal judges comment on our state's election processes in general?
So this was a really fascinating decision from the Seventh Circuit Court. I would encourage people to look at it if they're interested. I think two of the big takeaways, one were was that they talked a lot about Wisconsin election laws in comparison to other states. And they said that Wisconsin actually has a more accommodating system than a number of other states across the country. They pointed to in-person registration on election day. A number of states don't do that. And actually, they pointed to our early voting and said that the 13 days of early voting that they're allowing in their decision is actually more than a lot of states have. Some states don't offer early in-person voting. So that was a pretty interesting part of their decision, I think.
Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Senator John Erpenbach. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network.